This episode of Section D was first broadcast on the 1st of September 2015 on Monocle 24. Section D on Monocle 24 in association with Squarespace. Hello and welcome to Section D, Monocle 24's dedicated design show. I'm your host, Josh Fennett. In this very special episode of the show, we'll be perusing the painstakingly produced pages of the brand new Monocle Guide to Cozy Homes as it hits the shelves and counters of the world's best booksellers this week. Taking the home as our theme, we'll tour some extraordinary residences, retire to rarefied retreats, and find the secret to domestic success with some of our favourite architects, editors, retailers, and correspondents. First up, we head to Barcelona to explore a remarkable piece of postmodern architecture, the weird and wonderful Walden 7 apartment complex.
A building that combines behavioural psychology theories and intricate cubistic design, peppered with whimsical artistic motifs that are still visible today.
And then we head to the jagged spires and snow-top tips of Switzerland to meet a young architect reinventing the traditional alpine farmstead.
This Stöckli is in a very wonderful landscape, but there is not much more than the landscape, so principally the landscape is the topic of the Stöckli.
Finally, we tour our favourite housing types from Japan's famous Machia to Canada's quintessentially neo-Gothic Bay and Gable properties. All that to come on this homely but house-proud episode of Section D right here on Monocle 24. First up on the show, we head under the covers of Monocle's latest book project with German publisher Gestalten. Available from September 2015, the 400-page linen-bound beauty takes readers through a few of our favourite examples of homes, towns, cities and countries to put down roots in. The Monocle Guide to Cozy Homes is also a practical purchase. Expect a directory of designers and architects to call, homeware products worth purchasing, and the retailers we'd recommend wherever in the world you find yourself. To get some insights into the project, I spoke to Monocle's contributing editor, Tom Morris, who handled the project, to find out a few home truths and more about the alluring new title.
I think we sort of came up with the idea that, you know, there are so many good design books out there and good home books and interiors books, but they all kind of give a very pristine, a very perfect image of the home. Whereas I think in Monocle, we like to see things a little bit more practically and a little bit differently. So we came up with this idea of an actual guide to sort of teach you, you know, it goes through the basics of how to actually achieve your perfect home. And then there's lots of kind of visual inspiration in there too. The first sort of, I think like two-thirds of the book are just kind of beautiful homes that we featured in the magazine over the years. So it's practical, but it's, you know, it's an aesthetic joy to look at too.
And you alluded there to the front of the book, which is a bit of a glossy romp through existing properties from lush villas in Brazil to islands on the Swedish archipelago. Can you talk me through maybe some of your favourites and maybe through how you selected these from both Monocle's back catalogue and kind of the new ideas that came in? I mean, what were you looking to sum up and what were the highlights?
It was quite interesting to see how our take on interiors has changed over the years. In the beginning, it was used a lot of quite perfect homes and very sort of pristine, without people in them, without stuff in them. And then kind of gradually over the years, the homes we're interested in have got a bit more sort of crappy, you know, books, like shelves full of books, ornaments everywhere. The garden might not be perfect, but it looks like a nice sort of place to spend an afternoon in. So it's kind of pulling all of these together, choosing ones that have character, have a bit of definition about them. And then we came up with the idea to call the book The Monocle Guide to Cozy Homes, and that became quite sort of a good unifying theme for the book. The first one I love is the home in the Danish countryside owned by the CEO of Carl Hansen. It's like sort of, I think it's like 10-bedroom, huge, huge mansion. The inside is just full of like old Hans Wegner prototypes and things, just the most amazing furniture, beautiful garden, just a really nice, cozy family home. There's the Marcio Kogan in there, which I'd love to live in, which is a bit more of a sort of a tropical, cozy flavour. There's plenty of very nice homes I'd like to set up in.
And if we were to dive under the covers with you, Tom Morris, what could we expect to find in the way of other quirky chapters and features in the book? There are some beautiful illustrations, as you mentioned, there, the architect's call on the product. There's a very interesting chapter about kind of flat plans and how our homes change with us over time, and our kind of expectations of the built environment are different. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the others beyond the residences and the kind of resources, some of the other things that we touched on in the book?
So we came up with this idea of stages of life, which is to sort of look at how parts of your home, rooms of your home, elements of your home change as you get older. So it's a sort of, you know, it's a decade by decade, blow by blow look at how a kitchen evolves as you grow up. In your 20s, you know, you've probably got a little microwave and a sink. By the time you get to your 60s, you've got two sinks and a walk-in pantry and, you know, all of those things. Plants, you know, in your 20s, you've got a pot of basil in the kitchen. That's probably the extent of it. In your 30s, you might have a window box. 40s, you've got a balcony. 50s, you've probably got a huge rolling lawn. And then 60s, you probably downsized again back to a window box with a bonsai tree. So it's looking at life, which is what this book is about. It's about living and about life. It's not about design necessarily or just about homes. And yeah, the illustrated stages of life, it's definitely my favourite section. And it was really fun to do as well. We worked with a great Japanese illustrator on it. Me and Poppy Shimoto, our esteemed photo director. Yeah, we had a lot of fun doing that one.
And one of the sections of the book is a part that I particularly like. Is a section called Home Truths, in which we canvass the opinions of Monocle's editors, of writers, architects, designers, and ask them basically to write about something which isn't their work, which isn't, you know, why they're a chef or an esteemed architect. It's, you know, about the idea of home. I wonder if you can pull up any of those that you enjoyed, or if there are any take homes for you, particularly from working on the book, about the idea of home that kind of, you know, became clear over the course of compiling the book.
I think it goes back to what we're kind of doing with the stages of life section. I think the home goes beyond the four walls. The home is the most important thing, whether we own it or we don't, but certainly in our lives. And I think it has such resonance in all our other parts of life. So it's great in there. We sort of had real fun with, we got Ruth Rogers to talk about how to build the perfect kitchen, which, you know, she goes in there about its food preparation, you know, being practical, but it's not really about kitchens at all. It's about, you know, being the centre of the home. There's an amazing essay in there by a lady called Jane Wan, who lives, she works at the Bexhill Pavilion, the De La Var Pavilion down on the south coast of England. She's the curator there. And the stairs are the most satisfying depth when you walk up them. They're just amazing. So she wrote this whole essay about the pitch perfect stair, because she was brought up, I think, in South Korea, where stairs you don't really find. It's either elevators in apartment blocks or escalators in shopping malls.
That was Monocle's very own contributing editor, Tom Morris, joining us from Los Angeles to discuss Monocle's new book. The Monocle Guide to Cozy Homes is published by Gestalten and available at all good bookshops. You're listening to Section D with me, Josh Fennett. And next, for our Section D special on the subject of homemaking, we look at the many factors that go into making successful, beautiful, and inviting spaces. Design shops can be a key element of inspiration in this process, so we sent our very own Fernando Augusto Pacheco to visit Forest, a popular furniture shop in Clerkenwell, London, which, despite its owner's Dutch nationality, is a paragon of all things Nordic. Owner Ava Koppen's shop is a picture of domestic serenity and provides a welcome respite from the traffic-choked streets outside.
So we import everything from Denmark and the Netherlands. I kind of started off with only Danish things, but I think over the recent years there's been a lot more interest in Dutch design as well. And because I'm from the Netherlands, that is quite handy because I get to go back home and combine work and family. I think the fact that what makes it cozy is most pieces use, you know, beautiful woods, and they have a real character because of their age. And I mean, we refurbish a lot of items ourselves. We've got a workshop in Hackney, so we kind of tried to bring them back to, you know, how they used to be in the 60s, and then reupholster them as well, because a lot of the time the foam or the fabric is just really worn.
Before we walk around and see some of the pieces, I just want to mention, I was talking actually to my colleague David that, you know, when you think about cozy, it's not only in an alpine sat in Switzerland, but it can also be on a beach house, for example. And I mean, some of the pieces here I can totally see in a beach house in Ipanema or something.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like we just started doing quite a lot of plants. And I think, you know, when you go to the tropics, like the beautiful plants that they have there, they really create this feeling of coziness. And, you know, I don't think it's only the furniture. Of course, you know, you need to have furniture in a home, but there's so many different elements like lighting and, you know, how you use all of those to kind of create a space that you feel at home.
If you don't mind, shall we maybe stand up and just have a look at some of interesting, perhaps can you choose some of the coziest pieces?
Yeah, of course. One of my favorite chairs is actually this one over here. It needs new upholstery. So that's what we do a lot. We have items in the shop that we leave in the original condition, and then our customers can choose the fabrics, or they can bring in their own fabrics if they want, you know, a specific print. So this is it's a Dutch company called Bovenkamp, but a Danish designer designed this piece called Ipkofod Larsen, and it's got a really organic feel to it, but it's very comfortable. So it's on a wooden base, and then the whole rest of the chair is kind of upholstered. And I think having the wooden base with very kind of angular features gives it a real nice contrast. So it kind of creates this nice character of having a cozy top, and then the bottom is quite cool. So that's one of my favorite ones.
I quite like those two chairs as well. They look very cozy.
Yeah. So those, we always kind of call them bunny chairs because there's something that is a little bit bunny-ish about them. They're Dutch chairs and made from teak. And I think, you know, teak tends to have this really warm feel, and it's got a lot of character as well. Those are also unupholstered, so they need definitely upholstering because they've got kind of an interesting velvet flowery pattern on them at the moment. But yeah, and then I guess this desk chair is quite an interesting piece where it looks really slick, but it's very comfortable. And I think, I mean, that's the whole kind of, you know, what Danish furniture is about. It's all function over form. And although the forms are usually beautiful, it's all about, you know, posture and how you're sitting in a chair and how your back is supported. It's got a slick look, but it's very comfortable, and it makes it also cozy because of the use of wood and leather.
That was Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco there, taking a tour of Scandinavian-inspired furniture shop Forest in London's Clerkenwell.
Great design tells stories, and Squarespace's innovative website building tool is the perfect platform from which to tell them beautifully. Showcase your creativity, ideas, and business in style with Squarespace's unrivaled range of online products and services. To see how it could work for you and for a 10% discount, head to squarespace.com and enter the promotion code Monocle. Squarespace. Build it beautiful.
You're listening to Section D with me, Josh Fennett. The idea of the perfect home when presented in glossy magazines or architectural anthologies can miss the point of what makes a building something greater than the sum of its parts, the community in which it resides. For the Monocle Guide to Cozy Homes, our correspondent Liam Aldous and photographer Salva Lopez explore Ricardo Bofill's City Within a Building, Walden 7. Founded on a utopian ideal, the daring design concept was erected in a small industrial town on the outskirts of Barcelona. But the housing complex continues to provoke curiosity and awe over four decades after construction. We hear from our reporter Liam Aldous, who takes us on an audio tour of this most extraordinary of apartment complexes.
It's easy to lose oneself in Walden 7. It's not just the winding, vertical labyrinth of walkways that confound visitors, but also the story behind them that overwhelms. A grand social housing experiment built on a foundation of utopian ideals, new urban planning concepts, and just a touch of science fiction, it stands as a monument to a time of change in Catalonia. Attitudes were softening, old ideas were being challenged, and free thinking embraced in the twilight years of an aging dictatorship. It was the early 1970s, and to dream it all up, architect Ricardo Bofill removed himself from the distractions and influences of the urban domain and moved to the North African desert with a team of sociologists, poets, philosophers, and mathematicians. all aiming to flesh out a new vision of the modern housing estate. Each put their own distinct stamp on the result. A building that combines behavioural psychology theories and intricate cubistic design, peppered with whimsical artistic motifs that are still visible today. Bofill would later label the project his City in Space, a hollowed-out 16-storey complex of 446 residences and an array of street-level shops. It was designed to be a self-sufficient city within a building. Officially, though, it's Walden 7, deriving its name from the 1948 science fiction novel Walden 2. In the story, author B.F. Skinner explored how environmental variables could be tweaked to create a utopian community. When it was built in 1974 alongside a disused cement factory in the industrial town of Sant Just Desvern, just on the outskirts of Barcelona, it became an instant attraction for a new breed of the Catalonian middle class. Drawn here by the promise of living in a community of like-minded, non-conformists, many were eager to participate in Bofill's ambitious social experiment. Wandering the maze of exterior passageways and zigzagging up the Escher-like stairs, relics of the building's early bohemian days can be easily spotted. A sign in the corner of the rooftop terrace marks the location of a nudist section for one of the two pools. Verses of poetry line the walls of the subterranean car park, and the extensive network of corridors are labelled with names such as Frank Kafka, Albert Einstein, and even Jesse Owens. While rooftop parties have become a thing of the past, neighbours still band together for the summertime cinema held in one of the seven interior courtyards. They play ping pong at the communal tables, but not after 10 p.m, thank you very much, and proudly donate 0.7% of the building's annual budget to international charities. The idea that our environment can directly influence how we behave may have once been confined to the pages of science fiction. However, buildings such as this one have gone on to prove that such thinking can be grounded in reality. The surviving community may be infinitely more complex than any utopian image, but their faithful subscription to the architect's vision continues to hold them together. For Monocle in Sant Just Desvern, I'm Lee Maldus.
You're listening to Section D with me, Josh Fennett. Next, in search of cosiness, we head to Switzerland, specifically the valleys north of Switzerland's sedate capital of Bern. Here, in Basthal, one architect has reimagined the use of a once well-known agricultural building type, the so-called Stöckli. This traditional housing type is a feature of countless Swiss farmsteads. Internationally acclaimed architect and local lad Pascal Flammer decided to design and build a new take on the Stöckli for his young family, and our producer David Pleasant spoke to him about the end result, a building that looks to the local landscape as well as architectural flourishes from Japan to Brazil.
Basically, there was an existing Stöckli, and this existing Stöckli was rotten. I mean, it had to be replaced. And that's where I came in, and the building commissioner asked me to do the new Stöckli. Principally, what I was trying to do is, since this Stöckli is in a very wonderful landscape, but there is not much more than the landscape, so principally the landscape is the topic of the Stöckli. And what I did, actually, I produced three very different floors, and each of these floors has a very different relation to the landscape. In ground floor, it's this very horizontal floor. It's only 2 meters and 30 high. It's fully glazed, and one is slightly sunk into the ground, so of around 75 centimeters. So one is in a very physical connection to the outside. The upper floor is a very different relation. There we have very high spaces. They're up to 6 meters high. And the relation to the outside is the one via a large window. The third relation is the one below ground. It's a space that has only a zenithal light. And therefore, you are in Ballstall, you are in this Schöckli, but it is your brain, basically, that sets where you are. You could basically also be in Los Angeles or in Bayreuth or so. So I would say, basically, this building is about perception of landscape.
And also the Stöckli itself is something that references the local situation and Switzerland. But you've got some outside references and influences, would you say? You've looked to Japan and Brazil, perhaps, for some of the inspiration as well. Maybe talk us through that.
Switzerland has a good timber culture, but also Japan. So Japanese architecture and Japanese construction was always, let's say, a very important field to look at, because the way they do things is very nicely done and very inspiring. Same is somehow for Brazil. I mean, this building has also a lot to do with Brazil, even though, let's say, most of the Brazilian architecture comes out of concrete structures. But it has then been applied to timber construction.
That was the show's producer, David Pleasant, speaking to Swiss architect Pascal Flammer about his newly designed Stöckli-style home. You're listening to Section D with me, Josh Fennett. Now, to end the episode, we delve into a choice chapter of the Monocle Guide to Cozy Homes for something of a sneak preview. Lushly illustrated by Masao Yamazaki, the pages we've chosen chronicle and survey 10 pieces of idiosyncratic domestic architecture. From the Span House in the UK to the typical Finnish summer retreat and past the USA's so-called cracker house, certain typologies of homes seem to suit the requirements of a design-conscious dweller. Of the 10 housing types featured, we hear more about our four favourites. We talk Australia's Queenslander with Nolan Giles, Canada's Bay and Gable with Thomas Lewis. Then we hear about Japan's Machia properties from Fiona Wilson. And finally, Italy's typical post-war apartments with our man in Milan, Ivan Carvalho.
The Queenslander, the iconic timber home of Australia's Sunshine State, was developed during the Land Down Under's colonial years. Under the crisp Antipodean sun, the Queenslander makes for a striking vision, typically gleaming with a lick of white paint, which wards away damage from the harsh rays of the sun. Despite its simple visual elegance, every aspect of the Queenslander was designed very much with practicality in mind. The buildings, which remain popular in both rural and urban settings, are set high off the ground on wooden stumps. This prevents flooding from the torrential subtropical downpours the region is prone to. It also gave the hardy settlers of years past adequate space to store their tools and gardening gear, much needed for the lush flora which typically surrounds these buildings. Sheltered under tin roofs, the Queenslander's most notable feature has to be its sprawling veranda, which makes for the best appreciation of local weather possible. It may be a stereotype that Australians live outdoors, but Queenslander dwellers certainly eat, drink, and do most of their socializing on these expansive shaded settings. Many still see the Queenslander as the best possible home design to appreciate the state's varied weather.
The Bay and Gable by Thomas Lewis.
Now, these houses still speak very much from the sort of territory, I guess, originally that they came from. They were influenced by Victorian domestic architecture in the United Kingdom, very sort of Gothic kind of influences too. So you have the peaked roof and you have the lovely large bay windows both on the first floor and the second floor, but they are very narrow and you'll see the peak in the roof is really rather striking because of it. Now, this is actually a planning consideration from back in the 19th century when these kind of houses began to be built. And the plots of land were very narrow, and that was because bringing construction materials, bricks, into Toronto was actually kind of a difficult job at that time. It was quite a spread out kind of industry, as opposed to, say, some of these grander examples of similar houses, say in the United Kingdom, for example. There'll be quite large, wide living rooms. These are quite long and thin. And I think what the effect that has internally, at least, is, you know, light and fresh air were great considerations when these were built, and actually it helps channel the air and channel the light through the living space. Some of the gables have been painted in these beautiful, bright, fresh colours. Others have had porches rather tastefully added to them. Others, which were updated, say, a couple of decades ago and haven't been renovated since then, still have this quite lovely charm. And it's almost like a little sort of chapter book, I guess, of how Toronto's evolved. When you see maybe members of the older generation sitting on their porches, which are obviously updated in, say, the 60s or something, just sitting there watching the world go by, from probably one of the most beautiful examples of 19th century domestic architecture here in Canada.
The Machia by Fiona Wilson.
These are traditional wooden townhouses. They were found throughout Japan, but they're particularly associated with Kyoto, Japan's ancient capital. There are still many, many machia in Kyoto. Their design is really quite specific. They tend to be very narrow at the front. Very rich merchants had wider ones, but generally they're very narrow and very deep. So you have a front, which used to be a shop or maybe a silk weaving studio, and then it sort of progresses from the street, goes through to the back where you have the living quarters, and then you keep going. You maybe have a couple of courtyards, you have an area which is sort of earthenware floor, and then at the back you have the kura, the storehouses where you would keep whatever you were storing, food, produce, rice. And if you're interested in looking at machi architecture, Kyoto is the place. Anyone interested in traditional Japanese architecture should go and look at a machia, because they're amazing microcosms of traditional craft in Japan. I mean, they're built of wood, which is partly why so many have disappeared. They've burnt, they've fallen apart, but still people are trying to restore these machia. But if you look closely, they have an amazing array of, just look at the screens. They've got bamboo screens, paper screens, you know, screens for different climates, because Kyoto is extremely hot in the summer and very, very cold in the winter. So these houses were sort of layered so that you could open them up in the summer, close them in the winter, although some people would argue that they're still pretty hot in the summer and pretty cold. But it was a kind of early way of handling those climate extremes.
The Post-War Apartment Block in Italy by Ivan Cavallo.
E cottura uniforme nel forno rama, senza mai aprire il forno.
When Italy was going through its economic miracle, the 1950s and 60s, if you look at cities such as Turin and Milan, when Italy was going through this boom, it had to host lots of workers who were coming up from the south of the country. And so you saw apartment blocks, high-rise buildings going up. At the same time, for example, in Milan, a city that had suffered bombardment during the war, there was a need to provide housing. And so out of this, you saw some of Italy's leading architects and designers trying to provide solutions that were more than just cookie cutter. Now, I think if you look at Milan, one of the interesting examples is work done by Luigi Cacciadomignone. He's a Milan native, and he did some interesting things with the architecture. Again, very subtle. He's very Milanese because his architecture doesn't stand out too much. It's all about the details. If you pass by some of his buildings, you have to really stop and look carefully at the details. It could be some of the window designs, the sliding doors he uses. He also has some interesting techniques with cladding, these clinker tiles, and he's created kind of curious patterns, usually hexagonal, in a similar color. And he also plays around with, for example, the shapes of windows, so you don't see the sort of monolithic rectagonal windows from one floor to the next. He tried to mix it up a little bit so that you had some diversity in an apartment block, which most people see as sort of uniform and monolithic.
That was a run-through of our four favourite housing types from around the world, taken from our new book, The Monocle Guide to Cozy Homes, which is available now. And it's with regret that that's all we have time for on this episode of Section D with me, Josh Fennett. We'll be back at the same time next week, and if you've missed any of this week's show or just fancy brushing up on our back catalogue, you can head to monocle.com, SoundCloud or iTunes to listen again. As usual, today's show was perfectly produced by David Pleasant and expertly edited by Alex Funnell. You can also contact the show's producer, David, at dmp@monocle.com with any comments, queries or suggestions.
As always, thanks for listening and goodbye.